Okay, we're beginning here on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph by the Mishnah, and we're moving on with the permutations of what we had mentioned in the previous Mishnah with regards to Tnufa and Hagasha. Elu Te'unot Tnufa Ve'en Tnunot Hagasha. These are the items that require Tnufa, wave offering, but they do not require Hagasha, which is touching them against the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach. Log Shemen Shem Mitzorah. The Log Shemen that Mitzorah brings along with his Asham, the Ashamo. And the Hashem as well. So there is a wave offering with the Log Shemen and the Hashem, but there is no Hagasha. About Bikurim, Kedivrei Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Bikurim, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, which the Gemara will discuss, who believes that there is a necessity for a wave offering by the Bikurim. Ve'emurei Shamei Yachid, the fats of a Shamei Yachid. The truth is that the Emurim of a Shamei Tzibur also require Tnufa, but nevertheless, the Mishnah delineates them separately because the source for the fact that the Emurim of the Shamei Tzibur have a wave offering is from the Emurei Shamei Yachid, and that's why the Mishnah delineates them separately. Because the Shok Vishok Shalahen, the gifts that go to the Kohanim, the Chazen, the Shok, together with the fats of the Shamei Yachid, that's the wave offering that is done. Echad Anashim, Vechad Nashim B'Israel V'lo B'Acherim. So whether it's a man, a woman, a Jew, but not non-Jews. That's what it sounds like. Shtei Alechem, Ushnei Kibtzei Atzeret. We've discussed numerous times the Shtei Alechem that come on Shavuot, along with the Kibtzei Atzeret. You do a wave offering of them all together. Ketzad Huoseh. What exactly is this wave offering? Notein Shtei Alechem, Agabei Shnei Kvasim. You put the two breads on top of the two Kvasim. Umeiniach Shtei Yadav Lamato. And he puts his two hands beneath the animals. Molich umevi. He goes back and forth. Male umurid. It goes up and down. Shnemar, because the pasuk says, Asher hunaf v'asher huram. So this is in reference to the miluim. It says over there that you will do a hanafa, a wave offering, and harama, huram, up and down. So that's the Mishnah's source for the fact that not only do you go back and forth, but you go up and down. The harama is up and down. Hanafa, the waving is back and forth. How you learn that from the pasuk? Rashi brings two possibilities as to how that is learned. It says shenemer ben miluim asher hunaf v'asher huram. That's the pasuk that we quoted. Ole elminei k'tiv. And before that it says ve'anafta otam tnufa. There's a general statement that you will do a wave offering with them. And so gohani tnufot lomar lecha shemalech umevi male umorid. So the fact that at one point it just caused them a wave offering, and later on it defines the wave offering as bearing asher naf, asher huram, that's an indication to you that what's the definition of a wave offering? It's hanafa and harama. The other way Rashi brings it is, l'shna achrina mehunaf vehuram demiluim yafinan l'shar tnufot. Or do we say that the asher naf, asher huram by the miluim, then through Zota Torah, you would learn how that is true by the miluim, be true by the other korbanot? And therefore there's hanafa v'harama that would be necessary by any korban that requires tnufa. Tnufa ita b'mizrach. The wave offering was done on the eastern side of the mizbeach. B'agasha b'marav. But the hagasha is done on the western side of the mizbeach. So that we know already that the hagasha is done on the southwestern corner. So here the hanafa sounds like it's done on the southeastern corner. We have to find out why or understand why. Tnufot kodmot l'hagashot. The tnufot come before the hagashot. So if you have items that require both tnufa and hagasha, the tnufa will go first and then only the hagasha afterwards. Minchata omer u'minchat kina'ot tu'unot hagasha u'tnufa. Now we're on to the next series, which is the of these two items, which are the minchata omer and Minchat Kena'ot, which is that of a Sotah, require both Hagasha and Tnufa. Now, both of those we learned yesterday with regards to Hagasha, that how they're included. We had the Pasuk, according to Rabbi Shimon, that included both of them. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we included one, and then learned the other one logically. That Hagasha we know from the Psukim that we brought yesterday, and Tnufa is mentioned explicitly by both of them. Based on that previous statement of the Mishnah, it's likely that the gears of the Mishnah should not be that these items require Hagasha u'tnufa, but rather that require Tnufa v'Hagasha. And then similarly, in the next part of the Mishnah where it says, ain't tunot lo Hagasha v'lo Tnufa, it really should say, ain't tunot Tnufa v'lo Hagasha. because we already know that Tnufa goes before Hagashah, and therefore the right Girsa seemingly should be that it should have Tnufa before Hagashah. Lechem Apanim u'minchat Nisachim. This is the last of the categories, which is Lechem Apanim. And Mincha that comes along with a Zebach Minchat Nisachim. Ain't Tuno lo Hagashah v'lo Tnufa. They don't require either. They don't require Hagashah, nor do they require Tnufa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gimel Minim, Tunim, Gimel Mitzvot. There are three different items that require three different practices or processes to be done to them. Shtayim b'chol achat v'achat, u'shlishit imahem. Out of those three, no one of them has more than two. And the third one, they don't have. Ve'eluhein, these are the three items that have this. Zivchei sham yachid, the shlamim, my regular shlamim of a yachid. Zivchei sham yitzibor, the shlamim of a tzibor, which is the kibseh atzeret that are brought on Shavuot. Basham mitzora, and the asham of the mitzora. The three processes that we're speaking about, we'll see as we go through the Mishnah, which is Zivchei sham yachid, te'unim smicha, chayim, utnufa, shkutim. It requires smicha by the balim, placing their hands on the animal. And tnufa, wave offering, after it's already shechted. Ve'imahem tnufa chayim. But they do not have a wave offering while they're alive. So from this, you can surmise what the three processes are that we're speaking about. That is smicha. The other two are tnufot. But the tnufot, the wave offerings, can happen at one of two points. You have a wave offering while the animal is still alive. And you can have a wave offering after you already shechted the animal. Zivchei sham yitzibur, the shlamim of the tzibur, which are the kibsei atzeret. Te'unim tnufa chayim. You have to do a wave offering with them alive. That's what the Mishnah spoke about, that you put the breads on top of the kvasim, and then you lift up the keves with it. Ushkutim and shechted, they require a wave offering. Ve'ein b'hem smicha. They don't have smicha, because they're kurbanot ha-tzibur. Kurbanot yochid, in general, have smicha. Kurbanot ha-tzibur, with the exception of Yom HaKippurim, or Parham Dov Shel Tzibur, certain unique kurbanot, but otherwise the kurbanot ha-tzibur do not require smicha. Basham mitzora, and the sham that's brought as part of the tarata mitzora, over there, ta'un smicha, utnufa chai. Smicha, because we're going to learn that all the korbanot yachid require smicha. Tnufa chai, it requires a wave offering while it's still alive. Ve'imbo tnufa shachut, but it doesn't have a wave offering after it is shechted. So each one of these three items has two out of the three. No two have the same two, but they have two out of these three different processes done. All right, now the Gemara says, Tanu Banan, Yigriv oto liasham, v'edloga shemen, v'nif otam tnufa lifnei Hashem. It's a pasuk that's found by Tarat HaMitzora. In the process of being mitayer the Mitzora, it says, V'yigriv oto liasham, that's the korban ha-asham that you're bringing, v'edloga shemen, and the loga shemen along with it, v'nif otam, you will do a wave offering with them tnufa. Melameid shetunim tnufa ke'echad. The first thing we learn from this is that you do the wave offering together. It says, Ve'nif otam. You do a wave offering with them. Them meaning both the Loga Shemet and the Yasham. U'minayim she'emnif b'zeh ba'atzmo yatza. How do we know if they do each one individually, meaning do it sequentially, rather than bevat achat simultaneously? Tamad lomar, now they're going to reparse the pasuk. Ve'kriv oto le'asham ve'hinif. Ve'kriv otam le'asham is the beginning of the pasuk. Dat, 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 dat. Ve'nif, Rashi has a slightly different girsa in the Gemara, where he has Vet Loga Shaman. He has the remainder of the pasuk there. Ve'nif. They just cut the pasuk off after the verb Ve'nif. So Rashi's explanation relies on the fact that the Log Shaman is juxtaposed to the Ve'nif, and the Ve'nif might just be a reference to that one item and not both items. Although the girsa that we have, which leaves that out, seems to rely on the Kivoto. There's the Kivoto Ve'nif, which seems to mean that it's the Asham that is being referenced to in the Hanif. And that's what teaches you that if you do an Afa, each one of them individually, that it would be fine. Hanif is a singular wave offering. So it makes it sound like if you do each one individually, that would work. Yoko Yanif Yakzir Yanif, you would think maybe that's the better way to do it. Do an Afa, put it down, do the other one an Afa, do the Log Shemen, then the Asham, or the Asham, and then the Log Shemen. Tamal Omar, Tnufa. It says, Ve'nif otam tnufa. That tnufa is extraneous. You could have just said, Ve'nif otam. What does it mean, Ve'nif otam tnufa? Again, below tnufot. That you do one wave offering, not multiple wave offerings. So therefore, the primary way to do it is to do it together. That's the otam, which tells you they both need a wave offering. Nufa tells you it's a single wave offering, not multiple wave offerings. But the verb, veinif, which sounds like it's only one item, that is the bidyavad situation, which is, if you didn't do them simultaneously but sequentially, you are yotze, even though that's not the best way to do it. Lifnei Hashem, which is the end of the pasuk, bimizrach. That's on the eastern side. That's very difficult. We're going to see the Gemara itself is going to ask the question, and then we'll try to deal with the answer. V'amar, did you already say with regards to the menachot, Lifnei Hashem, when it comes to Lifnei Hashem, yechol bimarav, you would think that's on the western side. It's a reference to the mincha. The mincha has to be both on Pnei HaMizbeach, the face of Mizbeach, and Lifnei Hashem. So we always think of that as being the southwestern corner. Lifnei Hashem is referencing to the western side, the facing the Kodesh of Kodoshim. Pnei HaMizbeach being the southern side where the ramp, it leads up to the Mizbeach. But that means we always define Lifnei Hashem as Ma'arav, as the western side, because that's closer to the place where the Shekhinah resided. So then, why over here all of a sudden you're saying Lifnei Hashem means Mizrach, means the eastern side? So Amrei, Hani Milei Mincha Deikre Chatat. A mincha is called a chatat. The chatat to una yisod. And chatat requires that it be placed in a location where there is yisod, where there is a base or foundation for the mizbeach, the keren jomit mizrachit. And the southeastern corner, lo haya lo yisod, did not have the yisod there. So now, once you've determined that you have yisod and mizbeach, we know that yisod and mizbeach only exists on the northern face and the western face of the mizbeach. It goes a little bit into the south and into the east, but in general, the yisod is only found along the western line and on the northern line. When you go to the southeastern corner has absolutely no yisod on it. So that's how you know it can't be on the southeastern corner. We know it has to be in the south because we know it needs Pnei HaMizbeach. It has to be on the face of the Mizbeach. So you have a choice now. It's going to be on the face of Mizbeach at south and Lifnei Hashem. Well, Lifnei Hashem, you're telling me, means east-west, doesn't matter. So then, how do I know for the Hagasha where it needs to be? Well, it needs to be by Yisod the Mizbeach. The Yisod only exists in the southwestern corner, does not exist on the southeastern corner. So that's the nature of the limud over here. Of a Haka, Lifnei Hashem, Karinan Bey. Over here, where you don't have that requirement, the east is considered to be Lifnei Hashem. So first of all, Rashi eases some of the problem here by saying when it says Lifnei Hashem b'mizrach, it says Klomar afilu b'mizrach, Korinim b'Lifnei Hashem. It's not telling you that that's where you're supposed to do it. He's saying just until that point, it's considered to be Lifnei Hashem. If you do it on the western side of the Mizbeach, clearly that's Lifnei Hashem. But you can go as far as the southeastern corner of the Mizbeach, and that'll still be classified as being Lifnei Hashem. That's one thing that lightens some of the burden here. It's saying that it's Lifnei Hashem, Mizrach doesn't mean literally Mizrach, but it means that is the point at which it no longer is Lifnei Hashem. That's Rashi's view. The Rambam, on the other hand, when he codifies this, make it sound like Lifnei Hashem means definitively in the east, not in the west. He makes it sound like that's a absolute requirement. So then the Gemara says, well, why would you think that the mincha has to be Lifnei Hashem in the west, and this Lifnei Hashem is in the Mizrach. So the Gemara says, because the mincha has this unusual aspect to it that it's compared to a chatat. Question is, minchat choteh is definitely compared to a chatat. How do we learn from that to the remainder of the korbanot? So Tosafot gives two options. Im tomar mishar menachot minalan. How do we know the remainder of menachot have this requirement? If you say, because all menachot say kechatat v'cha'asham, we have the pasuk that tells us that it's kechatat v'asham. Im kein minchat choteh namitzi b'glei mi'otom. That's the case. You can learn the minchat choteh from there. Why do you have to specifically say the minchat choteh is a chatat? It says v'yesh lomar dechtiv lifnei Hashem al minchat choteh u'b'chol minachot namitziv lifnei Hashem. The word lifnei Hashem appears by the minchat choteh. It appears by all the other minachot. And so just like the lifnei Hashem that is mentioned by the minchat choteh means southwestern corner, so too, the Lifnei Hashem by all the other menachot means southwestern corner. Even though, as the Baitos point out, it cannot be a Gzeira Shavah, because otherwise it'll be Davar Lamid Mihakesh, Mincha that's learned from Chatat, and now you're taking from Minchat Chotel that was learned through Hakesh, and using Gzeira Shavah. And that we know from Ezum Mikoman, comes Davar Lamid Mihakesh, we're still not certain if it can go afterwards and then teach through a Gzeira Shavah. Therefore, he calls it a Giloi Milta. Just a way to express what does Lifnei Hashem mean, By Minachot, the definition of Lifnei Hashem is southwestern corner. That you get defined by Minchat Choteh. So then when it says Lifnei Hashem by the other Minachot, we know that means southwestern corner. This is how Tosfot learns, first of all, that Minchat Choteh has this requirement. Then on top of that, how we get it to the remainder of the Minachot. Tosfot over here asks a difficult question, but there are more difficult questions to be asked in the subsequent Tosfot. First of which is, we compared it to a Chatat. A Chatat has Matnot on all four corners above, and then the Shairei Adam, the residual of the blood, is poured out Yisod HaMizbeach. So the requirement of Yisod HaMizbeach is only with the Shairei Adam, it's not with the primary Matnotam. So over here we're comparing the Minchat Choteh to the Shairei Adam, not to the Iker Matnotam of the Chatat. He says, how do you know to do that? The Balei HaTosafot actually point out that this might be the solution to a problem of a girsa in the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim compares a Chatat to a Mincha. And it says that a Mincha is a Chatat and a Chatat is a Mincha. And then it says, Ma Chatat Hu Natzafon, just like a Chatat needs to be brought and shechted in the north, Af Mincha Hu Natzafon. So to a Mincha requires north. Ma Mincha Bikaren Marvit Dromit, just like the Mincha is on the southwestern corner, Af Chatat Bikaren Marvit Dromit. So to the Chatat is done on the southwestern corner. Uperish Sham Bekuntris, the Otak Yursa Mishubeshet. Rashi says that that Yursa in the Gemara is incorrect, because we never find that a Mincha needs Safon. So how can you say the Mincha is like the Chatat that required Safon? We don't find any such requirement. So then Rashi himself says, Uperish Bekuntris, the Nirlo de Garcina. This is what it should say over there. Ma Chatat Psula Shalolishma, Af Mincha Psula Shalolishma. Just like a Chatat is Psula when you do it with the wrong intent. So to a mincha is psula when you do it with the wrong intent. Tosafot rejects that view as well. It says, Vikashe the Puri Perusho, because he says that the source for it is brought earlier in our Masechta. Chatat hi is the source for the fact that the mincha, shalolishma, is problematic. Because it says hi. Chatat hi, which is me'akev, and therefore the lishma of a chatat, or minchat choteh, is governed by the necessity to do it, lishma. But that's not learned out from the chatat itself. That's learned out of the lashon that is learned by the mincha. And therefore he says, Rabbeinu Chaim Garis, ma chatat una yisod, just like the chatat requires yisod, tichtiv anisha badam yimatzeh yisod amizbeach, af mincha una agasha keneged yisod. So too, the mincha requires the agasha be done keneged yisod. Remember that the minchat choteh comes in a package. It's part of the Korbanei Olev Yoreh. So there's a Chatat Be'ema, Chatat Ha'of, and then the Mincha. Depending on your economic ability, you bring one of those. So that's the nature of the comparison. That the Mincha will be done similar to the Chatat. Over here it's the Chatat Ha'of, but you'll do it in a place, or the Mitzui Adam, in a place where there is the Yisod HaMizbeach. And again, the Chatat Ha'of is done in the lower half of the Mizbeach. And so that comparison brings you to the conclusion that the Hagasha of the Mincha also is done in the southwestern corner. And that's what the Rabbeinu Chaim does with that Kirsa in Zvachim, comparing Mincha to Chatat. This is the din that's important that we learn from Chatat to a Mincha. Tosafot then continues to question this about Lifnei Hashem. He says, had it not been for the fact that it was compared to a Chatat, and a Chatat requires Yisod HaMizbeach, sounds like Lifnei Hashem would be on the Mizrach, on the eastern side. And Tosafot says, we don't find that. He brings numerous examples. We know that from the Gemara in Yoma, other places. Whenever he uses Lifnei Hashem, it means the western side. So Tosafot answers in the first place to say, it depends on where you are located. Sometimes Lifnei Hashem can mean east. Sometimes Lifnei Hashem can mean ma'arav. So for instance, when you have to do the sprinkling of the shemen for the mitzorah, it's done Lifnei Hashem. That's done on the eastern side of the azarah. That's because the tarat mitzorah is done at the entranceway to the Azarah. So if there, if you're going to be Lifnei Hashem, just moving a little bit in would already be Lifnei Hashem. It's to exclude Bachutz. You can't do it outside the Azarah. It must be done inside the Azarah. Even though the Mitzorah is standing outside the Azarah, these sprinklings are done inside the Azarah. Inside the Azarah, as opposed to outside the Azarah, will land you on the eastern side of the Azarah, and it would still be considered Lifnei Hashem. So he says you have to know the context in which Lifnei Hashem is said. Speaking about a context of being in the Kodesh or in the Echal, you say Lifnei Hashem, that means west. If you have something where you're on the border between Chutz and Pnim, Lifnei Hashem means inside the Azara, which would mean even on the eastern side of the Azara. So in that way, he says contextually, Lifnei Hashem can mean different things in different contexts. Nevertheless, I still have a problem over here, because the context in which this is said is Mizbeach. And he says Mizbeach already is in the Azara, and you're not questioning whether you're going to be outside or inside the Azara. You're going to be by the Mizbeach anyway. The question is where on the Mizbeach, or where next to the Mizbeach you're going to be. Says then Lifnei Hashem should have been the western side, and he leaves it unresolved as to how the Gemara really comes to this concept that Lifnei Hashem includes the eastern side and not the western side. There are those that claim, the reason being that since the Baalim are participants in the Tnufa, then if we do it on the eastern side of the Mizbeach, that is more palatable because then the Baalim can reach that point. The Baalim are allowed to go into Makom Tisat Yisrael, which is the first 11 Amot in the Azara. And if they have a purpose, they're allowed to enter then into Makom Tisat HaKohanim, which is another 11 Amot, which will get them to the eastern side of Mizbeach. And they'll do the Tnufa on the southeastern side. What they can't do is be beyond the Mizbeach, or between what's called Ben Ulam La Mizbeach. That's only permissible for Kohanim that are not Baalim Mumim, who are doing a vote or have a purpose to be there. They can be over there. But Yisrael really can't be in that area. So in order to facilitate the Baalim's ability to do Tnufa, that's why we're defining the Lifnei Hashem as being on the southeastern corner. The problem with that is that we have certain korbanot where the Tnufa is done by the Kohen alone. We'll see that later in today's daf. As well as we know certain things like Menchat Omer or the Kibseh Atzeret, which are Kodshei Kodashim of the Tzibur, they require a Tnufa. And despite that, we don't see any necessity for that to be done on the southwestern corner when there are no Baalim involved. So others suggest that the reason for this is Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvot, which is, depends on where you're approaching the Mizbeach from. Whereas the Tosafot suggested that the context of the Lifnei Hashem and the Psukim tells you that. Others suggest it depends on where you started. Since you're entering from the eastern side as the Baalim of the Korban, the closest point where you'll be classified as Lifnei Hashem is going to be on the southeastern corner of the Mizbeach. If you're already internally, or if you're already inside of that area, then Lifnei Hashem is going to be the southwestern corner. And it's a matter of Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvot. Once you hit the point where you could do it, you should do it at that point and not go further. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Bikurim, Ketivi Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Bikurim are brought like the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. My Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, what's this source? The Tanya, because the Pasuk says, V'lakachat Kohen et atena miyadecha, the Kohen will take the basket of the Bikurim from your hands. L'meida l'Bikurim sh'tu'unim t'nufa. From here you see that the Bikurim require a wave offering. Divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. My time with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. All right, that still doesn't give us the information as to why he thinks you need a wave offering. All it says is that you bring the Bikurim in a basket, and then the Kohen takes the basket from you. How do you know that that means a wave offering? Gamar yad yad mishlamim. He learns Xavier Shava from Shlamim. Tiv haka, it says, lakacha kohen atena miyadecha, so that's the yad that's written by Bikurim. Tiv haka, it's written by the Shlamim. Tavel b'nei so le'mora makriv et zevach shlamav la'ashem, yavid korbano la'ashem et zevach shlamav, yadav tiviena et ishe Hashem, et achelev ale chazeh yivienu et chazeh la'nif otam tnufa lifnei Hashem. Makan kohen, just like over here by the Bikurim, there is the Kohen. Avdalan Kohen. So too by the Shlamim, it should require a Kohen. Malalan. Yadav Tiviyenu is a reference to the Yisrael, the Baalim, bringing the Korban. So there, Malalan, just like by the Shlamim, you require the Baalim. Avkan Baalim. So too over here, you require the Baalim. Ha Ketzad. How do you resolve that? So, Bikurim require Kohen. Shlamim requires Baalim. You have Zer Shava of Yad Yad that tells you that the wave offering that's done by the Shlamim is also done by the Bikurim, but the individual doing the wave offering is different. By the Bikurim, it's the Kohen. By the Shlamim, it's the Baalim. And the Gemara brings, because of the Gzeirah Shavah, the two are interwoven. That means that just like you need a Kohen by Bikurim, you need that by Shlamim. Just like you need Baalim by Shlamim, you also need Baalim by Bikurim. So how do you reconcile that? Kohen, meniach yado, tachet yadei Baalim, umenif. So here you have two interpretations of it. The way Rashi learns it is he takes it literally. That the individual places their hands on the item, whether here it's the fruits of the Bikurim under the basket, or in the case of the Shlamim, it's under the fats and the chazev is shok. And then the Kohen puts his hands under the hands of the Israel. And then there they do the wave offering together. So that's Rashi's view. The Baal Tosafot question whether that's correct, because then we have what's called a chatzitza, that the hands of the Baalim are sitting between the hands of the Kohen and the object itself. And that creates a chatzitza, and that's as if the Kohen is not doing anything or not touching it at all. So the Baal Tosafot favors saying that it is that the Baalim grasp the items from the side, underneath, but from the sides out towards what he calls the ogen, the handles of the basket. So the Israel puts his hands by the handles of the basket, and then the Kohen puts it at the base of the basket. So the Kohen is mitachat, below the hands of the Israel, not literally under the hands, but lower down on the basket than where the hands of the Baalim are. So that's how he says we accomplish it, not with hand over hand, but rather the hands of the Kohen being at the base, and the hands of the Israel being on the side. And that way, the Kohanim's hands are below the hands of the Israel, but there's no chatzitza. The Tosafot says that even though he thinks that's the right explanation, there is something in the Gemara and Sota in the Midrash Halakha that supports Rashi, which is with regards to the Minchat Sota. It says over there you have to do a wave offering with, again, the Baalim, which is the woman, and the Kohen. And over there, we're told by Chazal that they should use an older Kohen to do this, so that he won't become aroused by touching the woman's hands when he's doing the wave offering with the Minchat Sota. The Mishnah says you don't have to worry about it. Even a young Kohen can do it because they are being Minavel Ota. They are degrading this woman. And this is in a place where there's going to be a Yitzer because of the way that they're treating or demeaning this woman. And so because of that, even a young Kohen can do it. But what you see from that is that the hands of the Kohen do come into contact with the hands of the Baalim. So according to Rashi, that makes sense because they're below the hands of the Baalim. According to Tosafot, that's less likely to happen. But Tosafot says, nevertheless, it still might be the right explanation because you can't help when you're putting your hands at the base and the woman's hands are on the side of the Kli Sharet and you're putting on your base, there's going to be incidental contact when you're in such close proximity. He says, so even though they're not directly below, there might be still contact, and that might be what the Midrash Halacha is referencing to. Tosafot answering on behalf of Rashi just suggests that since the Ikar Tnufa is done by the Baalim, they get the primary position, and that's why it's not a big deal that the Kohanim's hands are below the hands of the Baalim. Or you could just say that's the Gzeret HaKatuv. The Torah tells you to do it in that manner, then they're no longer a Chatzitza. Because if the Torah prescribes this as the method, then that's what the Torah wants, and you don't need the Kohanim's hands to touch the actual basket or the Kli Sharet. The truth is that who you see as being the primary individual here with regards to the Tnufa might also have impact on a number of halachot. First of all, who makes the bracha on the hanafa? That's what the Minchat Chinuch declares with regards to this issue. Gemara says, "Vleima nami k'divrei Rabbi Yehuda." Why is it only Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov who says that the Bikurim require a wave offering? Rabbi Yehuda does as well. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, v'inachto. It says you place it down. Zot nufa. That's the wave offering. Taomer zot nufa. However, you call hanachto a wave offering. Maybe it is oenu ela hanacha. Maybe it's just putting it down. You have to put the bikurim down. Kishuomer v'inicho. When it says in the pasuk v'inicho, you will place it down before the kohen, before the mizbeach, by the bikurim, hari hanacha amur. You already took care of the issue of hanacha. It says, lakach ha-kohen atena miyadecha. He'll take the basket. Vehini cho lifnei mizbach Hashem alokecha. And he'll place it down before the mizbeach. Ha mani mikayim binachto. Bada hinei veiti et reshit pri adama asher natata li Hashem. Now I've brought these fruits that Hashem has given me. Vinachto lifnei Hashem alokecha. You'll place them down before Hashem. Vishtachavita lifnei Hashem alokecha. And then you bow down. Well, vinachto means to put them down. Didn't you already do vehini cho lifnei mizbach Hashem alokecha? It was already placed down. So then, what do you do with the extra hanachto that is found over there? So that can't be placing down anymore, because you already have the verb behinicho. So hinachto must have a different meaning. So that must be zo tnufa. And that is a tnufa. And the Shita Mekubetz in the Oralik explains the drasha a little more, where he says that the hanachto that is brought at the end of the parsha seems to indicate that the hinicho, which is brought at the beginning of the parsha, is tnufa, which would then seem to indicate that the hinicho was done prior, or the tnufa is done prior to his reading of Rami Oved Avi, And then Ve'inachto, placement down of the Bikurim, is done at the end. But that goes against what the Mishnah says in Bikurim, that the Tnufa was done in the middle of the Kriya after he starts the Remi Oved Avi. So therefore, the Shita Mekubetza concludes that all the Anachto is coming to teach you is not timing, but rather it's trying to give you an indication of what the meaning is. One is Anachto, means to place it down on the ground. Ve'inicho, he says, is equivalent to V'lonacham Elukim Derech Eretz Plishtim. Is to take something or to lead something in a direction. So Anachto is teaching both the definition of Inicho, so as the fact that it's not done all the way at the end. It's not done in the end, it's done before that. Before that is during the Kriya, the Parshia of Arami Oved Avi. And this would match with the Girsa of the Gra, who says that the Limud is actually reversed. That it is the Hinicho that teaches you the Tnufa, and Anachto is what teaches the placement. And that would make more sense for a number of reasons, because then the Inicho we associated with the Kacha Kohen Atenemi Adecha, and so the Tnufa would be involved with the Kohen, which makes sense, and Anachto would be that of the Balim, which would be done at the end of his reading of Mikra Bikurim. And so again, that would support the view of the Gra, that the Limud from these two words is reversed from what we see in the Gemara here. Inicho is the Tnufa, and Anachto is the placement down of the Bikurim. If that's the case, why can't our Mishnah be according to Rabbi Yehuda as well? Rabbi Yehuda also thinks there's a wave offering by Bikurim, not just Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Where it says, Amaravahu patach po akatuv tchila, that the drasha of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is earlier in the psukim of Bikurim. He learns it from Lakach HaKohen Atenem Yadecha, which is before Vihinicho and way before Inachto in the Parsha. And so we just took the person who has the first drasha in Bikurim that has Tnufa, and we use them as the paradigm or the example of someone who believes there is Tnufa by Bikurim. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Amar, the reason is, Hol v'Rav Gavrei. Because Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov is a big gun. As Rashi explains over here, Shua Chami Yoter, he was extremely erudite. The Kaimelon Mishnat Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov Kavanati. Any Mishnah, any statement that Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov is well thought out, and clean or pure, and therefore we paskin like Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov in any case where he appears in the Mishnah. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov carries a lot of weight when we say that he's the one who says that Bikurim requires Tnufa. Not that others don't say it, but Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it, that carries a lot of weight. That's why we mention him as the attribution for a position that believes that Bikurim requires Tnufa. Ve'murei shamei yachid, b'chazeh v'shok shalehen, echad anashim, v'chad anashim, b'yisrael v'alo b'achirim. My kamar. What's being said here? What is the issue over here that says men and women are the same? But Yisrael, not Achirim, Am Rav Yehuda, Achi Gamar. This is what's meant. Echad Anashim, Vechad Nashim, Korbanan Tu'un Tnufa. Whether it's a man or a woman, their Korban requires a wave offering. Utnufa Atzma B'Yisrael. And the Tnufa itself is done by Yisrael. Avalo B'Dei Nashim. But not by the woman. So Darabanan, B'nei Yisrael Menifim, B'Eino Ovdei Kochavim Menifim, B'nei Yisrael Menifim, Ven anashim menifot. So that Bnei Yisrael do a tnufa, but not the Ovdei Kochavim. Bnei Yisrael do a tnufa, ve'ein anashim menifot, but not by the woman. And even though the term Bnei Yisrael shows up numerous places in the Torah, and we don't always say, oh, it's Bnei Yisrael and not Benot Yisrael, the Ramban is discussing this in Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Vav, says that the truth is that Bnei Yisrael is only a miut when it's talking about a mitzvah to say. When there's a mitzvah to say and it says Bnei Yisrael, then we say Bnei Yisrael, but lo benot Yisrael. On the other hand, when it's a mitzvah lo tasei, there we do not make that diuk. And even if it says Bnei Yisrael, we'll include the women. The Rambam seems to indicate that the reason that the women are excluded is because it says Ve'inif, Lashon Zachar, and not from Bnei Yisrael. Although there are those that want to explain that the Rambam's explanation here in the Parish Mishnayot is a joint explanation, which is both the fact that it says Bnei Yisrael, and then afterwards says Ve'inif, Ve'lashon Zachar, that together makes it that it is exclusionary to women. But unless you have both of those together, it would not be exclusionary. And then the Rambam wouldn't have this problem as to, why don't we always darshan Bnei Yisrael, Ve'lo Benot Yisrael? Am Rabbi Yossi, Matzinu Shechleka Katuv, Ben Korban Yisrael, the Korban of the Kochavim. We find that the pasuk differentiates between a Korban Yisrael, to a Korban of the Kochavim, and the Korban Nashim, as well as the Korban of the women, Bismicha, That's with regards to smicha. Yechol nachalok v'tznufa. Maybe you would think to do the same thing when it comes to a wave offering. Samali chalek b'smicha. So why is there a difference by smicha? Shasmicha b'balim. Because the smicha is done with the owner of the korban. Nachlok b'tznufa. Shatznufa b'kohanim. So then you would extrapolate from smicha to tznufa. That doesn't make sense because smicha is done by the balim, whereas the tznufa is done by the kohanim. Imtein matam lomar b'nei Yisrael. So then why does Pasuk say about the tznufa? It opens with the terminology b'nei Yisrael, which seems to indicate b'nei Yisrael below b'not Yisrael, b'nei Yisrael below ovdei kochavim, b'nei Yisrael minifim, b'en ovdei kochavim minifim. B'nei Yisrael do a wave offering, ovdei kochavim don't do a wave offering. B'nei Yisrael minifim, b'en anashim minifot. And the women do not do a wave offering. So over here we have two brightot that seem to indicate that with regards to hanafa, b'nei Yisrael do hanafa, and not the Ovdei Kochavim. B'nei Yisrael do hanafa, and not the women. So here you have two brightot that indicate that hanafa is uniquely associated with B'nei Yisrael, with a male that is bringing the korban that needs to do the tnufa. And therefore it says over here, Hilkach, because the pasuk differentiates them, Ovdei Kochavim in Hashim, Achar Shem Miyatana Katuv, after the pasuk says that they are excluded, the smoke, to do smicha, Ein b'korbanan smicha, there is no smicha by their korban. Tnufa, v'yicholim ovdei kochavim yashot, aso ben shaliach. So the way that Rashi's Girsa reads in the Gemara, the two brightot seem to indicate that there is a tnufa that is done by Israel, not by an ovdei kochavim, not by an isha. Similar to what we seem to be defined by smicha. The smicha is done by Bnei Israel, not by nashim, not by ovdei kochavim. And so the Gemara says, seems to be that they would be parallel. Just like smicha has it, so too tnufa has it. The Braita rejects that and says smicha is different. Smicha is done by the balim. Tnufa is not done by the balim. So therefore, the Gemara then concludes that the nature or the way that this works is, when it comes to tnufa of Bnei Yisrael, of a male, then the tnufa is done by the owner of the korban itself. He is part and parcel of the tnufa. On the other hand, when it comes to the tnufa of a isha, or the tnufa of an ovdei kochavim, the kohen will do it on their behalf. As Rashi says over here, they'll make the kohen their shliach to do it, because the kohen is relevant in tnufa. By smicha, where the necessity is that the balim do it, they can't make the kohen into their emissary. So therefore, they're not going to do smicha at all. And what Rashi basically says is, there's a difference between smicha and tnufa. Smicha that requires balim, and it says b'nei Yisrael. The exclusion tells you that only b'nei Yisrael who are balim do it, and isha and ovdei kochavim do not do smicha whatsoever. Because if they can't do it personally, they can't send someone else to do it. The other hand, by tznufa, we have the same limud of b'nei Yisrael, which would indicate b'nei Yisrael and not an isha. B'nei Yisrael and not ovdei kochavim. Over there, you have an alternative. You won't do it yourself, but you can appoint someone to do it on your behalf, the kohen. So therefore, in this instance, b'nei Yisrael will do the tznufa themselves, whereas the nashim and ovdei kochavim will have the kohen do the tnufa on their behalf. So that's the way that the Gemara reads according to Rashi. And according to Rashi, isha and ovdei kochavim have the exact same halacha with regards to smicha, where they both don't do it, and tnufa, where they both don't do it, but they have the kohen do it on their behalf. The Shita Mekubetzet over here in Obed doesn't love what Rashi did over here. He says the Girsat Rashi uperusha kasher katuv basfarim. Rashi's Girsa, and that which is found in the Sfarim, is based on Rashi's emendation of the Gemara to follow the Girsa that we have in the Gemara. It says, V'lo nehira, that doesn't make sense to me. V'izeh ovdei kochavim nashim shavim. It says in the conclusion that according to Rashi, an ovdei kochavim and isha have the exact same din. U'b'shneim ha-kohanim minifim ha-yadam. And in both instances, the kohen does it on their behalf. V'kasha, d'tanya l'kaman. Because we have a brayta coming up that says, Aisha, a kohen menif al yada, that the woman, the kohen does it on her behalf. Velo tani ovei kochavim kohenim menifim al yadam. But it never mentions the fact that the kohenim do it on behalf of the ovei kochavim. So based on that, he says, "Fikach nira da girsa ktuva b'sfarim." The girsa that was originally in the sfarim is the right girsa. Which, interesting enough, is the way that Tosfo brings Perusha Kuntres, the way that Rashi brings the drasha over here. And that is, We see that by smicha, there's no distinction between a korban of a woman and a korban of a kochavim. They both don't do smicha. So too by tnufa, there should be no distinction between the tnufa of an oei kochavim and the tnufa of an isha. To that, the Gemara responds and says, not true. Smicha requires balim. That's why there's no distinction between the oei kochavim and the isha. The other hand, tnufa, which can be done by an emissary, over there, there will be a distinction between the isha and the oved kochavim. Well, the fear girsa zu ain't tnufa bekorban of the kochavim kalal. According to this girsa, there's actually three different rules with regards to tnufa. The oved kochavim doesn't do tnufa whatsoever. The korban nashim, she herself will not do the tnufa, but the kohen will do the tnufa on her behalf. And a korban Israel will have the balim themselves do the tnufa along with the Kohen, but they will do the Tznufa. It says, V'yesh tamba davar. It makes sense to differentiate between a Korban Isha and a Korban Ove Kochavim. That is, Korban Ove Kochavim, in Okvim Okhlim et Basar, Fikachenem din Balim. Since the Ove Kochavim doesn't have the right to eat the Basar because he's an Arel, so that would make a distinction between him as Balim of Shlamim and a woman as Bala of the Shlamim. Because she, as the Bala of the Shlamim, can eat the Shlamim. And that would explain why there might be a difference between the Korban of an Isha and the Korban of an Ovei Kochavim. Tosfot, in order to defend that position that believes that Ovei Kochavim also get Tnufa done for them on their behalf, and yet in the Brito later on we see only Isha is mentioned and not Ovei Kochavim, he suggests that that's according to the Mandamar that an Ovei Kochavim can't bring a Shlamim. Since he can't bring a Shlamim, it is an olah, and then there is no tnufa, and he also can't bring a mincha, he can only bring a minchat nisachim. So therefore he has no korbanot that require tnufa. On the other hand, our case over here is speaking about the mandamar that says that Ovdei Kochavim can be mitnadev shlamim, and since they are mitnadev shlamim, they also would require tnufa, similar to the isha who brings the korban shlamim, but can't do the tnufa, and therefore we do it on their behalf, for the kohen does it on behalf, like he would do it on behalf of an isha. Should just be aware that there is a third shita, which is that the women don't do tnufa whatsoever. Just like the Ovei Kochavim wouldn't do tnufa at all, women don't do tnufa at all. And that might have nafka mino as to whether the husband can do the tnufa on behalf of his wife. If she's tura legamre from tnufa, then there's no reason her husband should do it. If she is chayevet, but it's done ayidea kohen, maybe then the husband could stand in her place, because the principle of Baal Kishto, and therefore he can represent her in the Tznufa, and he can be the Balim on her behalf. Tanya Yidach. Another bright, the Bnei Israel, Ein Le'el Bnei Israel. Terim, Vabadim Meshucharim Minayin. How do I know? Convert, or slaves that are free, they also do. Tamalomar HaMakriv, anybody who's doing the Akrava. And as Tosva notes from here, Mashma Delohavu Bichlau Bnei Israel. From here, it sounds like they're not subsumed under the term Bnei Israel, and that would mean that we'd need a ribui. In any instance where Bnei Israel are used, we'd need a ribui to include Gerim and Abadim Shmucharim, because they're not naturally, or by default, subsumed under Bnei Israel. O'en o'ezeh, Kohen ha-makriv. When it says ha-makriv, the barrel of Bnei Israel leimor, ha-makriv et zevach shlamav la-shem, yavi et korbano la-shem et zevach shlamim, yadav tiviyana, and then afterwards you have who is the antecedent of the makriv? Is the makriv the Baalim, and therefore it would include the Gerim and the Abadim Meshuchorim? Or is the makriv a reference to the Kohen who's actually bringing the Korban on behalf of the Israel? Shomer Yadav Tiviyena, when it says that his hands will bring it, Hare Baalim Amor. They already see that the Baalim have a requirement to be there. Ha Ketzad. So then how do I reconcile between the Hamakriv and the Yadav Tiviyena? Makriv sounds like it's speaking about the Kohen, and now Yadav Tiviyena is speaking about the Balim. Meniach Yadav Tachat Yadav Balim, Umenif. So he places his hands under the hands of the Balim, and they do it on a fa. That's what we spoke about before. Ketzat Oseh, Meniach Emurim Al Pisat Yad. He places the fats on the palm of his hand, the Chazev Shok Alehen, and then he places the Chazev Shok, which are the gifts from the Korban to the Kohen. So the fats are going on his back, and the chazev shok is going to go to the kohen. And then he places the fats on his hands, and then the chazev shok above them, Any place that there is lechem also, that goes on top. That's like the cherry on top. So you have then the fats, chazev shok, and then the lechem on top. Hecha, where do we ever have lechem that also comes along that requires a wave offering? Amar papa b'miluim. That's by the miluim, where they brought, along with the shlamim, that has the trappings of a normal shlamim. There's an unusual aspect of it, but that's not important to our case. But the shlamim that requires the fats and the chazev shok to have a wave offering done by them. But there's also lechem. There's sets of lechem that come with it. And then one of those lechem is done part and part and parcel of the wave offering, as the psukim say explicitly over there, that omisala matzot, asher lifnei Hashem, that you take from the basket of the matzot, v'yaseim ala chalavim, and you'll place them on top of the chalavim, v'ala shokei yamin, and the shok. So you have them all together. Now here, the Gemara says that the example is the case of miluim, implying that that's the sole example. If you look at Rashi on Pei Aleph, Amud Aleph, Rashi over there says, kohi ha-makom sheish lechem, ha-lechem namalo. That's what Rashi says in Pei Aleph, Amud Aleph, v'amar hecha. Gemara over here asks where that is. So Amar HaPapa b'miluim. That's by the miluim. Rashi and Pei Aleph says, amai, v'amar todah. Why don't you also say the todah? Because the todah also has 40 loaves. One of each types of loaves, means four out of the 40, are given as a gift to the Kohen, 1/10. And those lechem also exist in a case or in a situation where you have a shlamim. A todah is just an enhanced shlamim. So why don't we give that as the example of a case? Because the todah also has a case where you have fats, hazen shok, and you have lechem. Rashi over there answers, ikale terutze iker milta nokot kidetzedim namideel. They just brought the primary item, like they answered earlier. They didn't bring everything. The truth is that todah also has this. But they're bringing the miluim either because that's the first time it was done, so it becomes paradigmatic in nature, or that's where it's written explicitly that the lechem goes on top. And you can see that in the Shita Mikubetzet Ot Aleph as well, where he asks the same question. He says, Mishom Dechtim Nami Mehubehedja, that since it's explicit by the case of the miluim, that's why we use it as the paradigmatic case, or the answer to the question as to where do we find this that the Gemara is posing. But that's not to preclude or exclude the case of Todah, which has a similar feature. The Gemara says, my time, why is it true that you put the fats on his hands first, and then the chazev shok on top of that? You show him tiktiv, because the pasuk says, shoka truma v'chazev tnufa al ishe achalavim yaviu lanif tnufa. It makes it clear that you put the shoka truma, the chazer truma, on top of the fats, then you'll bring them to do the wave offerings. It's pretty clear that the fats are on the bottom and the chazer shoka is on top. Problem is, vaktiv, et achelev ala chazer yevienu. It says you'll bring the fats on top of the chest. It sounds like the fats are on top. That's the kohen that's bringing it from the area where they flayed the animal. And they took it apart and took out the fats, and they took out the chazeh v'shok. So when he's bringing it from there, he has the chazeh on the bottom and the fats on top of it. Then he passes it to the next kohen who's going to do the tufa, so he flips it over. If in the case where he carried it out before, the chazeh was on the bottom and the chalavim on top, when he turns it over and places it into the hand of the other kohen, the fats are now on the bottom and the chazeh v'shok is on top. So that's why the tufa is done that way. Vaktiv, why don't he ask the following question? There's also another puzzle that says, Vesim et ha-chalavim ala chazot. You put the fats on top of the chazeh. How do'ayv lay the kohen achrina? That's because he gives it to another kohen, v'azil makter lay, and puts it on the mizbeach. So each time you pass it from the hands of one kohen to the hands of another kohen, it flips over. So you start in the mechaim, in the area where they flayed and took the animal apart. Over there you have the chazeh shok on the bottom, fats on top. He comes to the kohen that's going to do the tufa, he hands it over to me, flips it onto his hands, or the palms of his hands. So the palms of his hands are now have the fats on the bottom, and the chazeh shok on top. After he finishes doing the wave offering, he hands it to the next kohen who's going to take it up to the pyre and place it on the mizbeach. When he hands it to him, it's going to flip back again, and once again, the chazeh shok are going to be on the bottom, the fats on top. So that's how we reconcile these three different psukim. Two of them saying that the chazeh is on the bottom, the fats are on top. And one of them saying the fats on the bottom and the chazeh is on top. That pasuk that says the chazeh on top is about the wave offering. And so we say, the kohen that brings it to that kohen that's doing the wave offering, and the kohen that takes it from him will have it that the chazeh is on the bottom and the fats are on top. The one doing the wave offering will have the fats on the bottom and chazeh on top. And that's because they flip it over when they hand it to each other. V'hakamashmalan. From this you learn. From here you see that you need to have three kohenim involved in the process. Why do you have to have three kohenim involved? One kohen could have taken it straight from the Beit Mikdash, done the wave offering, and then taken it up to the pyre. Why do you need three kohenim involved in the process? When you have a larger multitude, that is the glory of the king. So the more people involved in the process, that gives more honor to the king because it shows more people in service of the king. And so therefore the necessity to have three kohenim, where one kohen could have done it, comes to teach us the more the merrier. And so the more people involved, the better it is. And this has halachic ramifications in regards to choosing. For instance, when it comes to Mikra Megillah, the halacha is that you should go to the place that has the largest crowd. Because Barobam Hadrat Melech, as well as Pursume Nisa, the larger the crowd, the better. That only is true when there isn't another trade-off. If you go to the larger place and you can't hear the Mikra Megillah properly, or there's no decorum, so then obviously you can opt out of Rav Hadrat Melech to be Yotzi the Mitzvah to do it in a more Mehudar fashion. The Rav Hadrat Melech is one consideration of an enhancement in the context of other enhancements. So you have to weigh it against the other issues by doing Rav Hadrat Melech. But it is a virtue, and that we learn from this by the Kohanim, that they require three Kohanim where one Kohen could have done it. And that teaches us Barobam Hadrat Melech. Okay, I'm going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Samach Bet Amud Aleph.